Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here. My name is Paul Hitchcock. I work with Harry Barth. Harry is the founder and senior managing partner of Barth Calderone Asset Protection, Estate Planning, and Business Planning Firm in Southern California, and expert asset protection attorney, speaker across the country. And I've got two incredible women here, Beth Atkinson and Tanya Minnick, who are Vistage chairs in Southern California. They're going to start off here in a minute, telling us what they're doing, the great things they're involved with. Then we'll move it over to Harry. As mentioning, for those of you, we had a big firm-wide meeting at the law firm this morning over this. Harry was teaching for 2 hours. It's a very big deal, a lot going on. And Harry, Beth and Tanya, I'm just going to hand it over to you if you want to get going.
Sure. Thank you. And thanks for teeing this all up. This is going to be tremendously valuable to our CEO Vistage members. So as Paul indicated, both Tani and I are Vistage chairs. We facilitate, we coach CEOs in a peer environment and also one-to-one. And it's all about being better leaders, making better decisions, and getting better results. And what I love about this is that the CEOs come together and it's what's happening and how do we navigate this? And so thank you, Harry, because, and I've known Harry for, I don't know, 18, a zillion years, many, many years. And
a lot of years. More years than we can't change. Yeah. More years than we care to admit, right?
That's right. And so, Harry, thank you for spending this time with us and sharing your expertise and helping to get in front of this Federal Transparency Act. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. Okay. Well, I guess I'll go ahead.
I was going to welcome everybody else to the group. And please be sure everyone who is here, put your questions in the chat. Let us know what's going on. If you want to respond to something that Harry has said or have a question specifically, please let us know so that we can feed that on to Harry for his wisdom. All right. Take it away, Harry.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's great to be here. Hopefully our constituency is many Vistage members and people considering Vistage. I've been a Vistage speaker for many, 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 many moons on asset protection, estate planning, and other issues. But today we're going to talk about the elephant in the room, the Corporate Transparency Act. It kind of crept up on everybody. Matter of fact, a lot of people didn't think it would ever happen. It was actually passed in 2020, but being implemented in earnest in starting in January of 2024. What's it all about? Well, in summation, we're going to get into a lot of details today, so you know what to do. And so, like Beth says, what are the next steps? We're going to cover next steps as well. But what was this all about? It actually started 9/11. With 9/11, there was a lot of financing going on behind entities for terrorists. And since the Patriot Act and a series of other, maybe 10 other pieces of legislation, governments, both domestically and internationally, have been trying to make sure that they have an understanding of who owns the business. That's very important. It's very critical for us in our conversations today to understand the goal, because when we understand the goal, we'll understand what's behind this. We want to know who's the human beings that are behind that LLC, that corporation, that limited partnership, right? Any entity that has to be filed with the state. And it's also important to understand this is not an act that's just moving forward, that went into effect in January 2024 for new entities created. The goal of this act, it's hard to believe but true, is to register the beneficial ownership of all 33 million small businesses in the United States of America. And it's not voluntary, right? It's compliant. The penalties for not bringing an entity into compliance is $500 a day for every day that it's not in compliance, and up to $30,000, excuse me, $15,000, and up to 2 years in jail. That's a penalty. It's a felony. So we're dealing with something that's not small. So that's that's what's behind it. Now, just to also know, there are two things afoot. There are some, primarily one, court case moving its way through the judicial system, federal judicial system, trying to hold this Corporate Transparency Act as unconstitutional. Now, in the hour's time that we have, I don't think it's viable or valuable to go through all the legal principles of the unconstitutionality of the act. My legal opinion is that the act will be upheld because it's in effect in most modern Western economies, and it's in effect inherently in the United States in Know Your Client Acts when we're interacting with banking institutions, sending a wire, doing whatever we do today, as well as with notaries. Sure.
Quick question for you. This sounds like a pretty aggressive penalty.
Yes, it is.
Is this normal? Why the extreme penalty?
The extreme penalties is because, and you're going to see something more extreme, is the purpose of doing this is to get compliance. They need to build this database so they know who's behind the entities. Now, this is not, I repeat, not a public database. This is a database that is allegedly only to be available for the government and governments sharing with other governments. All right. Okay. This is not, so if one has a Wyoming LLC for asset protection and privacy purposes, or a Delaware LLC, wherever it may be, or even an entity, an LLC in offshore that does not publish who the managers and the members and the shareholders are, that remains the same. It still remains private. This is absolute private information. And there are very significant penalties for any breach of this information on a federal level as well. So, you know, Joe Blow goes in and tries to breach some of that information. Joe Blow will sit in jail for 10 years for doing that. So the government's pretty serious about that. Okay. The other thing that's important to know is that time limits. We're going to be talking about time limits today to get things done. And one of the issues that we face is when they initially were proposed, the time limits were relatively short. So we had, when a new entity comes into effect, which we'll learn about after January 2024, we had 30 days to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act for that new entity. Even FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is a division of the United States Department of Treasury, too short a time. So they extended that to 90 days. We have 90 days. And for all the 33 million existing entities, they have to be filed by December 31st, 2024. Wow, that's a Herculean task to do. And there was a bill passed in the House that still has to go to the Senate for approval and then to the president for signature that will extend the period of time by a year. So we'll have to basically till December 2025 rather than December 24 to comply for the pre-existing entities. And we still have the 90 days, but also any modifications and changes, they only were going to give us 30 days. It has 90 days. But in this bill that was passed by the House and going through the Senate and the president, there was an onerous aspect of it as well. Tani, it just kind of fits in with what you were saying. FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, this is the same people that deal with offshore bank accounts and offshore banking. It's the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. So it's criminal activity not to do this. Even there, they said that failure to meet the requirements of CTA, don't even bother submitting it. There are no excuses. Meaning that I have four owners of a corporation. four owners are supposed to report. Three owners are willing to report. The fourth owner says, I'm not going to give you my information. All right. Then we cannot submit to CTA. You will be out of compliance and you will be charged with a crime. Okay. Now, who gets charged and how it gets charged and where it goes, we don't know. That's part of the potential unconstitutionality. Okay.
So there's no exemptions or if you have one person in an entity, that's...
Nope. If it's required to file, which brings us to our first point. Our first point is who is exempt from filing. So let's go through that together and let's go through the list. All right. So these are organizations. So start with every organization that has ever been registered with the Secretary of State, every corporation, limited partnership, limited liability company, limited liability partnership. If it's an entity that was born as a result of a Secretary of State, start with, they are subject to the Corporate Transparency Act unless they fit within an exemption. There are 23 exemptions. Let's go through some of them. So the first one is public companies. Public companies are exempt. This is targeted for the small business, the LLC that owns real estate, the LLC that Harry put together in the trust that holds stocks, bonds, and cash to protect your assets from the claims. But this is what it applies to. Public companies, no. Okay. SEC registered investment advisory firms, no. Because we've already been fingerprinted, you know, they've checked our underwear size and everything else long beforehand. Venture capital fund advisors, no. All right. Insurance companies and insurance producers, no. Okay. Other highly regulated financial services companies like banks, credit unions, and registered securities brokers and dealers, no. Because all of the information about all the people who own it are already there. They have that. Public accounting firms that are registered with Sarbanes-Oxley, they already have all the information on the accountants who could sign. They do not apply. Tax-exempt entities, you know, charities, nonprofits, political organizations are not reporting entities. Trusts, but be careful. We'll be careful when it comes to trusts. Trusts under this law are not reporting entities. However, and I'll explain this a little later, if a trust owns an entity, which most of them do, then the trust becomes a reporting entity. So the trusts themselves, no. Entities exist, helping tax-exempt entities are exempt. Governmental agencies, of course, are exempt. Subsidiaries that are owned by exempt entities are exempt. So if we have a holding company, that's exempt, and it has two subsidiaries, it's exempt. And the one that's going to apply to most or some of your Vistage members is the large company exception. If we have, and this is not or, this is an and, 20 full-time employees as determined by state law, and we are headquartered in the United States or have an office in the United States of America, and we have gross sales of $5 million or more, that entity is exempt. Got it? 20 full-time employees, not part-time, 20 full-time, 5 million gross sales, and got an office here in the good old US of A. They are not a reporting entity. Now, this year, they might not be a reporting entity, but if sales are $4.5 million the next year, they become an employing entity. If they have 18 employees the next year, they become an employing. You know, if they're 18 now, they're reporting, and then it become 20, they don't. It's a moving target, all right? So this year, for 2024, because we have to report every company by the end of 2024, it's at the time of our filing, 20 full-time employees, over 5 million gross sales, and in the United States, they are exempt from reporting. So those are your exemptions, all right? So our members, our guests, and others will look and see, do we fall within those exemptions? And 4.7 million of gross sales doesn't do it. This is the Department of Treasury. They got your tax return. Do it. I'm telling you, you're going to get fined and go to jail. So once we determine whether or not it's a reporting entity, that's a lot, most of every small business in America. You know, you got five person, you know, you got a law firm that's five people, a medical practice, you know, a professional corporation is four radiologists, you know, and six staff. All of them are reporting entities. Every widget maker, everybody else, every real estate LLC that we have, every S corporation that doesn't meet that criteria are reporting entities. So the first step in our analysis is are we a reporting entity? We may not be. Like Barth Calderone has over 20 employees, over 5 million gross sales, and isn't that Barth Calderone is not a reporting entity. But 12 of my entities that I own all are reporting entities. Barth Calderone is not, the rest of them are. Most of the Vistage members and other people, you know, they'll have the company maybe big enough, but then they'll have real estate, separate companies, you know, a partnership with their brother, whatever. I mean, those are all reporting entities. So once we get to a reporting entity, it's the entity that's going to report, all right? So now the question is, so we get to the next step of the analysis. We have Bethco, all right, LLC, and we've determined that Bethco LLC is a reporting entity. So now that entity needs to be reported to FinCEN. What information must we send? So we must send to them, all right, or file with them, the actual legal name of the company. That's what's going to be on the articles of organization, the articles of incorporation, and every single DBA and fictitious business name used by that company. So it could be Greenco doing business as Agrico, doing business as law. Every one of those need to be described. Then we need to report where that company is located. All right. The company, the headquarters, the location of the company. It cannot be the attorney's office. It cannot be a post office box. It cannot be a UPS box. It cannot be the lawyer's office, the actual location. And then we need to report the actual financial, unique financial number of that entity, like its EIN number that it has with the Fed. If it doesn't have an EIN number because it's a disregarded entity, the social security number, there must be a number associated with that entity. So,
Karen, when you say the actual location, you mean the physical location.
Physical location.
A lot of them have registered in Delaware and other places, but you want
no,
them.
No. They'd be registered in Delaware. Remember, the goal is, where is it? Who owns it? All right. So you may be registered in Delaware, but we're doing business on Tustin Avenue in Tustin. It's the Tustin Avenue address that has to be given. The Delaware address means nothing. They want to know, where is the company? Now, remember, just so for own edification, the AICPA, the CPA organization, has basically told all CPAs that this is not your ballgame. This is the unauthorized practice of law because of the determination of all the things. You really should hire a law firm to do this. And very important, ladies and gentlemen, when you hire a law firm to do this, you get attorney-client privilege. And when you're dealing with something that has such strong sanctions and penalties, I think you want to make sure you got it right. So it may sound like I'm pushing what we do, but in case as I am with some similar to us, better than, you know, self-help here or some obscure filing service. Let's continue on. So now we have that reporting entity. We got it, okay? Bethco. And so that's the opening of the door. Now we have to report on what they call all of the beneficial owners of that company. A beneficial owner is anyone who owns more than 25%. If a minor owns 25% or a trust for minor, then the parents need to report. So if I have Beth is one owner and Paul is an owner and Harry is an owner, all three of us must report that we are 33 1/3. And what are we reporting? Our names, our full legal names, the address where we live. If we can't, not our real physical address, and a color copy of our passport, unexpired passport, or our driver's license in color. Those must be done. if someone doesn't have a driver's license or passport, some form of state authorized identification must be used. If they don't have it, they have to get it because it has to be reported. So hopefully they have it before the deadlines are up, or $500 for day fine. They got to get it. So we have to report that. But the trouble that we face is the law is a little deceptive because it's not just who the owners are. So if there's a minor, I told you the parents report. It's also who controls. Hmm. So there's a control factor. So the manager of the LLC or the managers of the LLC, every one of them, even if they have no ownership in the company, must report. If we have a corporation, every C-suite, COO, CEO, CFO, president, chairman of the board, because they have control of the company, each one of them must report. If we have a board of directors and the board of directors can change the C-suite members, they could change who the president is or the COO, every member of the board of directors needs to report. If we have a voting trust that's voting the shares of the stock, the members of the voting trust need to report. Everyone needs to report, and they all have to report that same information. Now, FinCEN has made it a little easier in one respect. Beth, you can go online today. Okay, this is the one thing we can't do for you. And you go to the FinCEN website, and you can get a FinCEN identifying number. It's like a new social security number. You load up, this is Beth Atkinson, this is my address, here is my passport, okay? And I request a number. They'll give you a number, 300-002-7234. So now in all the companies where you are reporting, you could just put Beth Atkinson and the number rather than every time having to put that information. The filing service that we have can't get that because there's like 10-factor authentication, typical government website that goes along the way to do that. But then we could use the FinCEN reporting number. So anybody's going to be involved in a number of entities like myself, we have to do that. Now for new entities formed, that so let me pick the old entities first, finish the old entities. Now, so that looks pretty good. So we have to report all of that stuff on every one of the entities that we own. If you say that an entity is inactive, all right, it has to meet the determination of inactive of the CTA. And it's kind of like ridiculous. It can't have had any business transactions since 2020. All right. If it has any business transaction at all since 2020, even a bank account, it's not considered inactive and has to report. So if we have shelf companies or companies just lying around that are doing nothing, as many of us have, it's probably a good idea to have them dissolved unless we're going to use them before the reporting date. So we don't have to get involved with the reporting of that particular entity. Now, it gets kind of complicated. So let's just take Bethco again. Bethco, we make it as a corporation. Beth's got a third. Harry's got a third. Paul's got a third. Its president is Tene. So we're reporting for you. You have to report. Beth reports. Harry reports. Paul reports. Now, Harry took his portion of my shares of stock in Bethco, and I put them inside my living revocable trust for estate planning. Now, trusts are not reporting entities unless they own over 25% of the beneficial interest of a reporting company. Hence, my trust now becomes a reporting entity. I now need to report who is the trustee of the trust. They need to put their information. Who are the beneficiaries of the trust? Their information, unless they're minors. Who is the trust protector? Their information. If somebody holds what we call a power of appointment, and they have the ability to change the direction of where trust assets go, they have to report at the same time. So everyone involved in the trust itself, although the trust is not a reporting entity, if they have any control of the beneficial interest of a reporting company, they need to report as well. So in some of our, for example, Nevada Asset Protection Trusts, the Nevada Asset Protection Trust company is not a reporting entity, it's a financial institution, but the five trustees that are eligible to work on my trust all need to report. All right. If I, as the creator of the trust, have the right to substitute assets, we do that all the time in estate planning, substitution of assets. Ugh. Me as the settlor of the trust has to report. So in one corporation, okay, or one entity, we could have 20, 30 reporting requirements. Now imagine this. Imagine why one-third or the one-third is owned Beth, Paul, but Harry didn't buy it. Harry's LLC bought it, or Harry's corporation is the third owner. So now my corporation is a beneficial owner of greater than 25%, and all the information about my corporation and its CFOs and its owners all need to be reported as well. Okay, can you say it's nuts? Absolutely nuts. So this is for every single required reporting entity in America that needs to be done as of the laws today, as of December 31st, 2024, or those egregious penalties apply. Now, shift with
me. Sorry, question. Yeah,
sure.
Now, you mentioned with the extension of 2025, is this?
It's not passed yet. It's passed the House, not passed the Senate, and good old Joe hasn't signed it yet.
Okay, so if I came to you and I said, Mr. Harry Barth, you're my lawyer, should I kind of rush into registering, or should I kind of hang back and see if things change?
If you have an non-exempt entity, I think it's time to let's get moving. It's all you're providing, remember, is all of the required. It's not egregious, the information.
No, not at all. It's
very simple. We just have to do it. All right. So we do it. You know, you wait. All right. I got news for you. You're not going to be able to get it done. All right. The website will get jammed. You won't find a lawyer that's available because we're jammed. The earlier, the better along the way. So some people are going to wait. So we have clients already. We've had like 160 clients that in the first few days of January said, please get it done for us. And we have others that'll say we want to wait till June and see what happens. Okay.
Will you talk about sometime during your talk here, what the cost to register
Well, right. It's the cost to you and Harry, such as ours. Yes.
There's a question from our community. Is it required that a lawyer help with this process?
No, you could do it yourself.
Perfect.
You could do it yourself. Hey, you could write your own will. You could write your own trust. You could do it. You know, you could file your own tax returns. You know, you could do you could do it yourself. It's not required to have a lawyer. The suggestion is it's probably a very good idea because you have to make all these determinations of ownership, control, beneficial interest. It's very easy to mess that one up. And, again, attorney-client privilege, I think the pricing is not very expensive to do it. I'll give you the pricing in a moment after we talk about new entities. All right. So because we just described what has to happen for every non-exempt entity that is in existence in the United States. So I may have, one of your members, Beth, may have 12 entities and they're all reporting entities. They got 12 that have to get filed. And some may start off in January, but by the time we get all the information we need from the reluctant people, it might be August, September before we're able to file. So it may not happen immediately. We may be engaged to do it, but it might not necessarily happen. But let's talk about new entities. So someone comes and to my office, we file probably 100 entities a month for clients. We're a pretty big law firm. And so now, where we would charge, let's say, let's just talk about what we have to do. So we got a new entity, we formed it, we realize immediately when we're forming it, we know it's going to be a reporting entity. So 90 days from the time the entity becomes active with the state. We go to Delaware, we form the entity, and on such and such a date, when Delaware says you are officially an entity, all right, we have 90 days from that time to file that entity with CTA. Now, we know, or should know, where that entity is going to go. We know who the owners could be, other entities. Think about it. I file a new entity that's owned by two other entities that's owned by another entity. Oh, boy. I could have 35 reporting things that have to get done. And control. All the control people. Now, under the new law as well, God love them, the paralegal or the clerk in my office that filed that new company, she has to report as well as the company applicant. So my paralegals are saying, we formed this company for Beth Atkinson. All right. And the supervising attorney for that paralegal was Harry Barth. He has to report as well. I recommended that entity to Beth Atkinson. I report. Cheyenne filed it. She has to report. We did it for Beth. And Beth and Paul have to report. The managers have to report. Their trusts have to report. We have to get that all assembled, analyzed and assembled, and off to CTA within 90 days of the time that we formed the new entity. Limited partnership, LLC, limited liability partnership, corporation, SC. It makes no difference if it's not into one of those exemptions. They must file. Now, so Beth, let's talk about costs a little bit. Now these costs are just Barth Calderon costs, Harry Barth costs, my firm. And the compliance does not talk about what it takes to bring all of their entities into play. But on new entities, since we know when we're forming a new entity, we know where it's going to go. We know who the owners are. We know who the members are of the LLC. We know who the managers are. We don't have to go hunting around. So we're only applying a $395 legal fee on top of the form. So let's say it's $2,000 to put together the LLC legal fee. Traditionally, it'll now be $2,000 and then a $395 legal fee for CTA compliance for that entity. Not bad. And then the filing. So that's just the legal analysis of who has to file. Then that goes to a filing service that we have, which is not the law firm, called Corporate Transparency Filing Solutions, $250, no matter how many people are involved, whether three people involved or 40 people involved, we will file it for them and get that all done, $250. And guys, it's one and done. We don't have to file it again, absent changes.
Oh, yeah. And that's just what I was going to ask. There was a question that was asked that, let's say one of the owners, they filed, one of the owners, 3 months after they file, they move. Do they have to notify?
Yes, that and owner, the beneficial owner. So here's the deal. So it's the reporting company's responsibility to make sure that that beneficial owner upstates their information with CTA. So if they now have a new address and a new driver's license in a different state, that has to be updated. We will do those for like $99. Okay.
Okay.
If the company moves, with a change in the company, it's a lot more involved in doing it. It's $199, but they're not a lot to do that. But you could have it even better. The 33 1/3 owner dies. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now it winds up in trust administration or in probate. So while it's in there, our best assumption is it doesn't have to be updated until it lands at the beneficiary level. When it lands at the beneficiary, then that beneficiary is now over 25% owner. And the other thing too to understand, in community property states like California and others, you know, if one spouse owns 12.5%, the other spouse owns 12.5%, they're aggregated together, that's 25%. If children But parents, one child owns 10% in the trust, another child owns 10% in the trust, parent owns 5%. That's 25%. They have to report. So there's the kind of the attribution of all of that going together at the same time.
Harry, and, can I ask a quick question? If you
sure.
said if one of the spouses owns over 25%, the other spouse isn't named in the ownership, it's a separate company, you still have to report the other spouse?
No.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. But if you've got two owners, two spouses, 12.5, 12.5, total 25. Yeah.
I thought because of the community property state.
Both have to report. No,
okay.
Just one.
All right.
Just one. So that's a movie. Remember, this brand new law. So there's going to be new regulations that are issued. You know, water's going to meet different levels of where it goes. But those are all the things that have to be done on new entities. You got the new entities. You got the old entities that are involved. And I've already discussed the penalties that are associated with that. And so you got beneficial owners that have to be determined, company applicants that need to be determined, the company itself is a reporting entity that needs to be determined, and then all of the various different things that get done. And it is, Beth, one and done. In the absent changes, nothing else needs to be done. So it's a one-time kind of expense if they want to have people do that for them. Given the complexity, I think that the pricing is worth it to get it done properly. And
if they want to actually register themselves, can you share the website, or where would they go to register?
Yeah, it's www. I think it's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network.com. We have that. We'll send out. We'll put that.
I'll send some resources to everyone as a follow-up.
Oh,
that would be excellent. Thank you. And also, Harry, for everybody else, if they do want to reach out to you and have your firm handle it, if you can also include your information, that would be awesome.
Yeah, Paul will put that up in the chat box in a moment. And the other thing too is very important with all this information that's floating around. Passports and driver's licenses, we need to make sure that we have a secure encrypted methodology to hold that information and when they're transmitting it. Now, remember, two ways to go. So Beth says to me, Harry, can you take care of this? You give me your name, you give me your address, and it has to be full legal name and any other names you had known by. And then your legal address and your passport, your driver's license. Or you could have gone to the FinCEN website and obtained, which we strongly suggest, your FinCEN identifying number. All right. You put the same information in. They'll ask, for two-factor authentication, password, name your first pet, all that other crap that they typically do. They'll send you a text and you'll get it back. Then they'll give you a number. Then all you need to give me is the number of that. It'd be Beth Atkinson, number so-and-so. And then we don't need to retransmit that information all along. And then if you moved, for example, then you would just update your information. Your number would remain the same, and we wouldn't have to change all the other documents. So getting a FinCEN number makes a lot of sense for all of us. It's like getting a Social Security number along the way. And so that, guys and girls, we'll take a bunch of questions now, but that is now. And then looking backward, you asked about cost as well. So I gave you the cost of filing. Now looking backwards, all right, for those that have, the 10 or 12 entities that they have, the legal fee to analyze that, and really a lot of analysis, and who owns what, who's in control, do they have enough control? All of those things are important. We're going to charge $595 for an entity to do that and $250 to file it. All right. And if they want to file it themselves, they can just wave off for us. It's up to them. If somebody wants us to form LLCs, corporations for them, and they say we'll handle CTA ourselves, that's perfectly fine. Just sign off. You always have the privilege of doing your own tax returns and filing your own documents.
Eric, I feel like this is sort of like the real ID for businesses almost.
Well, it's exactly what it is. It is exactly the same as the real ID for business. And the real ID is the who's the person. This is who's the person. So if you think about it, that's what we're drilling down for. And so if we just have, it's owned by the Shining Apple Trust, that doesn't do any good. Who is the Shining Apple Trust? Who controls Shining Apple Trust? Who could move things around? Who could change the trustees? Who are the beneficiaries? You know, all of those things. So even though Shining Apple Trust is not a reporting entity, it becomes a reporting entity because it owns a reporting entity. And just to know, to make us all smile even more, there is a version of the bill, of new bill, floating through Congress yet again, which is the Trust Transparency Act, which is everything for trusts, the same as we're having for all of these filed entities. I don't know if they're going to have to go that far because the entities that are owned by trusts or in trusts, those trusts are becoming reporting entities along the way. So it may sound that it's onerous. It's really not. It's just, hey, this is who we are. I mean, no law-abiding person should have a problem with it. It's not a public, all right? And I've done it already. I gave them all. I have my FinCEN identifying number. And now I have the project of going to my 12 entities and searching out all these different components, laying them out, and then giving over to the filing service. Let them file it. I'm not going to file it. $250, they can file it. I'm not going to sit on the computer and play with government websites. And if they have to get a new tax identity, we'll get the numbers for them as well.
Harry, I'm curious, on your website, I haven't looked at it recently. Do you do little white papers or updates on what the latest happenings?
We've been doing a lot of webinars and seminars on this. Paul, we also have white papers and stuff that's available for this. And then we have our sister organization, Corporate Transparency Act Filing Solutions, that has a lot of resources on it. FinCEN's website has a lot of resources on it. Resources is not a problem. The problem is the analysis to who must report. Mm-hmm. Some of it's simple, some of it's extremely complex. All right, so you got the reporting company, and then you have the beneficial ownership of that reporting company once it comes to play. And then changes, like the weird changes. Like I said, what if Barth Calderon's next year's revenue is $4,900,000? Now Barth Calderon becomes a reporting entity. There's no exception for lawyers. There's no exception for doctors. No exception for Indian chiefs. You know, it's everybody, unless you fall into one of those 23 exemptions that I gave us when we started our conversation today.
Harry, you took a subject that seemed really daunting and made it. It seems pretty clear from listening to you, and so thank you for your guidance on this. I know this is really going to be beneficial to all of my members.
Yes, and one thing,
every CEO,
it becomes a great opportunity for every business owner that has all these entities to do a checkup on them, make sure they're assigned to trust. Even in myself, the Shoemaker Shoes, I found out a couple of my entities weren't assigned to Barth Family Trust. Me, who preaches this for 50 years. Holy crap, that wasn't it. I discovered that. So it gives me a chance to look at my articles of organization, to look at my operating agreements, look at shareholders' agreements, look at the ownership structures, make sure they're assigned to trust. Great checkup. Do I need this entity? Do I need more entities? You know, is my asset protection good? Is my, because the entities that weren't assigned to my trust were going to wind up in probate. I caught it that way. And then to make sure that all of my documents, or even, shareholders agreements and buy-sell agreements that everybody signs, they have to sign that they will comply with CTA, because what if you get a holdout and says, I hate you. We're not on good terms. I'm not, I'm a minority. I own 25%. I haven't spoken to you in years, and I am not telling you where I live, and I'm not giving you my passport, and I'm not giving you my driver's license. Oh boy. The firm, there's no out. There's no out. The new law, the one that's going through Congress, says, no out. Either you get us all of it, or you get rid of that person, buy them out, do whatever you have to do, or you're not in compliance. Now, that to me is unconstitutional, but but that's the way it is. My God, I looked at that and looked at that. I spent hours in big, thick books on the Corporate Transparency Act. And many of us were saying we were kind of hoping that this didn't happen. It'd been postponed 2 years, you know, but it's here now.
And Harry, I agree. Thank you so much, Harry. This is great information. And it is, as Beth said, it's dense. Clearly, you have a handle on the density. There's no question about it. So I appreciate you being such a thorough resource for us on this. It's been a tremendous education.
Thank you.
Paul, I don't think there are any more questions. So
good. Good. Yeah, no. Yeah. Harry's pretty thorough. Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank everybody for being here. Beth, thank you. Tane, Harry, great. And for all those listening, we're going to get the recording out as a follow-up so you'll have it. And also the resources go to the site with Q&A, all that stuff. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And Beth, thank you. I can't wait to see you.
Good one. All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
Okay.
Sing it.